Glenn Elliott was a star for the Saints through the 1970s. A few numbers that will tap that off. Obviously, the obvious ones, 138 games from the club between 1969 and 1977. Played in the 71 grand final, best and fairest in 74. Won the Simpson Medal representing Victoria against WA in 1976. But a few others as well. Throughout the 1970s, Glenn Elliott had 30 possessions in a game or more on 22 occasions. Only one St Kilda player did it 10 times. Other than that, it was Paul Callery, who's been a guest on our program. And he also had six of St Kilda's top 10 possession games through that decade. He was a very fine player, and we're delighted to have him as a part of our podcast this week. Glenn, thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for making contact.
Now, you did mention off air before we started that you were kind of a bridge between eras, that you played with a lot of the premiership heroes of 66, and then it obviously went a little bit tricky for St Kilda through the 70s, but we had a few chances, you know, obviously 71 when you played in the grand final, 72, 73 with finals, but interesting part of St Kilda's history, I imagine, to be a part of, a very good side for a period there, and maybe could have won another flag.
Oh, yes, we were just talking about the different era and about my parents agreeing for me to go to St Kilda when I'd been a long-term Collingwood fan, and quite mystified once I'd got there that there was a dual Brownlow medalist who played in the centre. And my first year there was a bit challenging because just leaving school after all those years, I probably didn't handle it as well as some.
Well, I mean, taking a step back, how did you end up at St Kilda? I mean, you from Yay, I think you went to Scotch College and played some footy at Scotch. How did you end up at Moorabbin?
Yeah, I came from Yay in the northeast. I went to Scotch at boarding school, and a couple of clubs, zoning was in at that stage, and the Yay area was zoned to Geelong, and I was probably destined to go to Geelong, and I'm not sure to my own memory as to how it all came about, but my parents ended up meeting with St Kilda, and I think they ended up doing a transfer a couple of days before zoning actually came into place. So if it had just taken its normal course of events, I'd have been zoned to Geelong.
So first senior game was actually a win against Hawthorn. Recollection of that day, how it went, how you were before the game, who you lined up on, that sort of thing?
Oh, probably can't remember my opponent, but certainly I think I played in half forward flank from memory. So I think we won the game from memory. You'll probably hit me with some stats, but I don't think it would have been outrageously generous in terms of what I achieved on the day.
22.
Not a bad day. Touches. Not bad for a senior debut, 22 touches.
Well, he's an incredible coach at that stage too, Alan Jeans, and obviously he'd been to St Kilda and was later to be at Hawthorn. And I can vividly remember my first year there and training with Jeansy, and went and put my arm around him one night when walking off and said, look, I'm getting a few kicks in the twos. Is there any help? Can you give me a bit of help about what I've got to do to get a senior game? And he loosely put his arm around my shoulder and he said, you'll find it's easier to do what I want you to do. And I said, does that mean listen? And he said, that'll help. And it took an eternity for most of us who played with Jeansy to earn his respect, but once you'd earned it, it was a lifelong commitment, which was very gratifying and probably a hard lesson to learn, actually.
Back then, it was often very positional, where one person would have a spot, you'd be playing for that spot. I mean, these days they run players off the bench and you have nine midfielders and that type of thing. But how much did you learn from having Stewie there in the early days when the time did come that you were the prime centreman for the remainder of your career? How influential? I know it probably held you back from playing in that position for a little while, but when you got that chance, how big had he been for you?
He was quite a mate, actually, and he tended to stay out late at night as well, which probably helped me get to know him. But, look, it was interesting. I can remember playing against him when he went to Richmond, and always remember his remarks at the opening bounce. He said, you know, you'd never got a senior game unless I'd left, and which was a welcome to the MCG. But halfway through the third quarter, when Jeansy's instruction that day was to simply, I wasn't measured by how many kicks I got, I was measured by how many kicks my opponent got. And I said to Stewie halfway during the third quarter, have you ever had so few kicks by just after three-quarter time? And I won't tell you what its response was. we'd probably have to cut the chat a little bit short. You're interested when you made that comment about the transformation of footy, or the, if you'd call it that. I knew my opponents for the year. It was virtually Bedford and Price at Collingwood, who was too fast for me, and a whole range of other players whom you knew, or Thorpe out of Footscray. You knew your opponents before you even started the year.
What's so your
it's all changed.
What's your recollection of that period with the Stewart Barrett transfer, and like what was it talked about at the club within, you know, amongst teammates and your friends? Was it talked about then?
It may have been talked about by Stewie was probably somebody that I nearly idolised as a person who knew a little bit about BFL footy, but it may have been talked about more amongst the senior players. To me, it was a celebration when he left. so when Barrett came, he was never popular. Well, very few people would remember it now, but that era, there was player transfers were a bit uncommon because Barrett came there and Rex Hunt came there for a couple of years at one stage, and was probably the noisiest man in the change room we've ever heard. A bit quiet out the race, but he entertained people when he was inside.
But, not much has changed.
We had I think St Kilda might have led the way in the introduction of the WA people to the VFL back then, when, you know, McIntosh turned up, and then George Young, who was just an outstanding, and Bruce Duperuzel. So there were some great players came from WA to St Kilda at that time.
Just before you move on, one more question about that before you get back to your career. But your memories of Billy Barrett and his 1.5 games for St Kilda?
Quite relieved that he didn't make it. I say that. He's probably a nice fellow. I never got to know him. And, he had a very short stint at St Kilda. But I was, you know, literally in real terms, I was relatively a junior because I was, 18 or 19. And so it was a different era. And you, at that stage, you probably socialised more with your own age group. So you weren't privy to a lot of things that were happening at senior level.
Did you find the pressure at that age stepping into pretty much the boots of a Hall of Fame centreman to step up into what he was doing? How did you, I guess, handle that? Or did you just think, well, I'm just going to play my game and stepped into there?
I think, well, I had different attributes to Stewie. Stewie's a highly skilled dual-sided player, and I probably prayed for the rain a bit because for all intents and purposes I was a bit slow. And at one stage probably nearly left St Kilda before I'd started, when there was an approach from Geelong to go down there because Rod Olsen had been tied up with Scotch over the years, and he was coaching down at Geelong. But I was to be there and to earn Alan Jeans's respect, I probably ended up with a career because I did what I was told. And then as you became a more automatic selection, I think Jeansy gave you a little bit more latitude and a little bit more latitude. And we had some great fitness coaches at the time. So I was never destined to win a sprint race. So I probably took the option of trying to be the building a highest level of sustainability as opposed to the fastest. And that probably helped me over the journey.
A philosophy that worked well for someone like Robert Harvey a couple of generations later. It was very similar in that space, just became the running machine. 1971, you know, the word tragedy gets thrown around a lot unnecessarily, but that was a St Kilda tragedy, that grand final, 28 points in front just before three-quarter time. Your recollections of that day, Hawthorn were an unbelievable side. We've heard about the Cowboy, Peter Hudson saga, but yep. Your recollections of that near miss?
Probably Keddie. What did he three in the last quarter, didn't he, I think, from memory?
Four, yeah.
So I know you probably chatted to Cat, Gary Colling, and probably not the most memorable experience he'd have. A couple of us have jokingly blamed him for not having a premiership medal around our to be able to display people, but that's a little bit harsh. And, yeah, look, we did enough to win, but both sides were highly competitive, probably played a similar brand of football to each other as well. But it was, yeah, having only been there for a couple of years, 71, you thought, well, this is upwards and onwards forever. It was seemingly a little bit too good to be true, but I think the my most vivid memory was the sadness at the end of the game, and you're oblivious to the fact that there was anybody at the MCG, as I mentioned before, and to think that there were so many people there still seeing the end of it, and yet you were there and couldn't hear anybody. It was a lifelong memory.
Tell us about one of the stars of that team in Cowboy Neil, who obviously had played a big role in the 66 premiership a few years earlier, but
yep.
played a pretty big part in that 71 grand final as well. What are your memories of Cowboy?
Cowboy is the most welcoming person you could ever meet in a football club. And I think that for somebody who's new at the club, whether you're a first year player or whether you're a 10-year player, he smiled at everybody. And he welcomed everybody with his face. And I think it's, I can remember, going to a couple of over at Wodonga there, the get-togethers for him, and he still had a smile on his face even then. And I'm not 100% sure whether he would have recognised some of us, but I think that's where he was so consistent, and he brought the club sort of built around that person, because he didn't treat you as a second player or a senior player. He treated you as a person, which was priceless. And if anyone had a bad look on their face, he'd always had a joke to tell as well. But so he was, just a marvelous individual to be involved with. And his efforts against Hudson, well, they're memorable. And it is interesting, isn't it, that a fellow could kick those goals as full forward and then end up fullback in the next grand final that the club played in. But, yes, he would have extended every rule known to the football fraternity then, I would have think, in stopping Hudson. And if they'd had maybe a camera just on Hudson and Cowboy for the day, it would have been interesting watching.
So moving forward just a little bit, you pick up Best and Fairest in 1974. You see these big events these days for Best and Fairest and everything. There's like a huge night sort of thing. Take us back to 1974 and how it happened, and what did the club do back then?
We went to the Moorabbin Town Hall. it was announced, and it wasn't forewarned, and probably I was a little bit surprised by it. But, yes, there certainly wasn't any live count. It was more an announcement of the various award winners and things like that. And it probably came as a bit of a shock to have, you don't anticipate having a season strong enough to win a club, what do they call it? Best and Fairest, we were back then, I think, not club champion. But, I remember the night, and probably there was no big celebration after it. I think we just went home. you weren't in on the Yarra there, sort of going to some flash casino or whatever. It was it's very humble, the facilities down at Moorabbin.
So obviously St Kilda had made finals 70, 71, 72, 73, slipped a bit after that, but 75 and 76, Jeansy's last 2 years were very competitive. probably should have made the finals in 75. Do you have any, I guess, recollections of that side? It didn't fall off a cliff. Obviously, through the mid-70s, we were still pretty competitive.
Oh, I think we're around the mark. I mean, Alan Jeans was always, you know, somebody, I think, jokingly said at one stage he'd probably get more pride out of a courageous narrow loss than a spectacular victory. But it's a bit harsh on Jeans' coaching because it changed a lot when he went to Hawthorn. And he did the best with what he had. And I think making sure that the club was competitive was his great forte. And to a degree, I suppose, Ross Lyons brings a bit of that to St Kilda today, in the sense that, you know, they're highly competitive all over the field. And I think that was Jeansy's number one. It didn't matter what position you were playing in. Being competitive was the most, I guess, the quality he was looking for most in people. And particularly, he'd, as I jokingly said before, he had great confidence in those who'd earned his respect, or those who'd listened to him for long enough and did what they were told.
You, I guess, before the end of your time at St Kilda, had a bad knee injury. Do you remember how that happened, how you did the knee, and then what was, I guess, the next 18 months like in terms of your recovery and rehab until you finally came back to senior footy with Melbourne?
It was horrendous, and yes, I can remember being carried off and seeing Owen Deakin, the club specialist at the time, and we were all frightened to see him because normally meant you ended up with plaster of some description. But it really became quite difficult, and probably reached the end of my tether actually in terms of having to turn up to the club and be seen, and people asking how your leg was when you knew it wasn't any good at all. And it was a strange transition to go across to Melbourne, because I can't remember St Kilda actually asking me to play again, despite the fact I was running around Moorabbin Oval doing a lot of my training. And I had a call from Melbourne, and they asked me how I was recovering. I said, oh, not too bad. And would I be interested in catching up with him? And I said, no, I think it'll be fine here. And I'll leave the person's name out of it. But the person at Melbourne suggested that wouldn't be the case, that it might be better if you were open to seeing us. And of course, Carl Dietrich was there at the time, and that probably had some influence in it, I would say. But yes, going to Melbourne was interesting. After I went there nervously, to be perfectly frank, because I wasn't sure whether I'd be able to play again. I had a practice match at Prahran Oval, and somehow or other got through that and did very little training in the lead up to that. But I think it was the fact that I had a good relationship with Carl Dietrich, which probably allowed me to get an opportunity to play again. And from St Kilda's point of view, you may or may not remember that late 70s, the club wasn't exactly a financial powerhouse. And so there were a lot of players that were disappointed at the time in the way things they played out. So I've got to say quite brutally, I wasn't there sitting there looking to try and find another club to play at. It just happened. And it was interesting that the physio who was the physio at St Kilda, had gone back to Melbourne, and I had to see him for my fitness test. And so when they sent me out to see him, he put his arm around my shoulder and said, what am I seeing you about? And I said, you've got a rough idea. And he pushed and prodded my knee for a little while and said, it's not very good, is it? And I said, no, but or he told Ray Manley that. And then Ray called me the next day and said, could you come in and sign your contract? And so I did, and saw him. And when I saw Ray, I said, it was Adrian Wright, the physio. And I said, what did Adrian say about my knee? He said, it's stuffed, but you'll play anyway. Not exactly. I don't think that would pass the test today, would it?
Probably not.
No, probably I'd not. Say definitely not. But there was, there was a joy in going to the MCG when you used to get there, apart from finals, once or twice a year. to be able, the Melbourne players, many of them would have understated the experience that they had to just go out and have kicked a kick on the MCG two or three times a week when with nobody in the stands was quite unique, and what a fabulous stadium it is.
So after finishing up at Melbourne, you've kept in the football game in different ways, mainly yep. in South Australia. Run us through where you've been after that, who you've been with, which teams and that sort of thing.
Yeah, came to South Australia with work after I'd been for a year with Melbourne, and I was transferred over here, and it was a very uncomfortable transfer. It was difficult for the family. We'd left both our families behind, and so it simply didn't work out. And I went back to Victoria, to country Victoria, where my family came from, and spent 12 months with my working in the stock and station business with my father, which he'd been there forever, and Coach Seymour in the Golden Valley. You may or may not be aware, but we won a premiership, and then from left field got a call from West Torrens to see if I'd be interested in coaching over here, and so we took up the opportunity and came back to somewhere we didn't like in the first place, which is you'd say, what the hell are you doing? But and I've been here ever since. And so I coached West Torrens for 4 years, and I must highlight in an interview like this, I was actually a premiership coach. We won a night premiership, but then became deregistered. Does that sound better than sack? Paul Weston came back to West Torrens, and they asked me what I thought about that. And I said, well, why not? If we don't win a premiership next year, I won't be here anyway. But they took it a step further and brought the decision forward. So I wasn't coaching. And since then, I've spent a lot of time in admin. I was CEO at North Adelaide and Glenelg Football Clubs here twice, and had two stints. There's an ironic sidelight for you. I was at Glenelg the first time around when Mark Williams was told he wasn't required. So I wonder to this day if Mark Williams would have ended up an AFL premiership coach if Glenelg hadn't have told him he wasn't ready or okay. They weren't happy with him. They'd brought in a Port Adelaide player and it didn't sit very comfortably at Glenelg. And I think from there, Mark went and may have coached reserves at Essendon with Kevin Sheedy, and his whole career blossomed from that. So he was probably very fortunate what happened at the time. But and I spent 4 years with Adelaide United, or 5 years with Adelaide United in the A-League, which was thriving at the time, and I believe it's not travelling as well now. But I had an offer to go there as CEO, and I told the owners, whom I knew very well, who took over the licence, that I said, no, my name ends in T, it doesn't end in I or O, I'm not going to do this job. But anyway, it was fabulous experience internationally to be involved in it. And so I finished up with the Bays in 19 when we won the premiership, and retired at their 1920 AGM. So that's is that a quick summary of all my South Australian involvements? Lived down the coast, and do a lot of swimming in a place called Port Elliot, actually, at Horseshoe Bay. So it's a stunning, stunning venue.
And just quickly, you also had, just going back a little bit into your career, you had opportunity playing with both your brothers at one stage or another. They're at one St Kilda, one at Melbourne. It was a bit of a interesting crossover. You probably wouldn't get many players to get that sort of opportunity. How was that whole thing?
Well, look, it was an incredible day. Robert, it's sort of I think I highlighted some of the financial problems that some of St Kilda's great stalwarts played their way through that. Robert probably wasn't one of them. And when I went to Melbourne, he came across, and then Bruce had a crack. And yes, it would have been interesting to have played on it for They both played on for the next year. I think Robert had 2 years. Bruce may have had one. But it would have been interesting to have stayed at Melbourne and had the second year under Carl, and then Barassi came back, of course. But it was a really trying year for that footy club. And as we all know, you win or you lose. And, you know, most sins in a football club are forgiven when you win. And when you lose, every single thing you've ever done wrong comes to haunt you. But that'd be a nice Trivial Pursuit question, wouldn't it, in the VFL, AFL, to name the three brothers that have all played together at the one club. And yeah, it was a fabulous achievement, and full credit to both Robert and Bruce. And I know it made my parents really proud at the time. And a lot of the A people came down, and they loved it.
And am I right in thinking that you won a reserves best and fairest as well?
It's the only way forward, isn't it? Before they take it seriously. Yeah.
Well, that wasn't just sticking on the family theme, but that wasn't the only achievement from a reserves patch either, was it? Did you meet your significant other at a reserves game?
Yes, you've done a bit of research, haven't you? Well, I can tell you exactly what happened. I was a disgruntled reserves player, and the reserves was over, and Lois, my wife, was walking through the gates near the change rooms at Moorabbin with a girl called Dorothy Betts. And I was not about to go up and sit in the stand and act as if I was interested in the A grade. So I was on my way out, and said good day to Doc. And she said, "Oh, a friend of mine, would you like to say hello?" So we did, and that's how we met. And so we're still together after all these years, which is fantastic. Probably more credit to Lois than me. Yes, it was a very strange way to meet your future partner, wasn't it? To be he was paying to go in to watch St Kilda play, and I was sulking and going out.
Encapsulates the way that footy changed lives, yeah, I think, you know, in a really significant way.
Yeah, and I admire the due diligence you've shown in this interview, Pete. Because very few people in this world would know it.
Well, one player you've mentioned, last one from me, that not a lot of people would know about privately would be Carl Dittrich. He keeps a lot to himself. We know that he's a quiet character that sort of drifted off a bit after his football career. Can you tell us just a little bit about Carl? You mentioned the crossover with Melbourne as well. And what was Carl like as a bloke? I just get the feeling that if you were playing footy with him, you'd walk a little bit taller, knowing that, you know, I've got a bit of protection, a bit of reinforcement out here with the big fella.
He was priceless. For me, and we don't keep in touch every 5 minutes, but we do keep in touch and compare long-term injuries like ankle things like that, and how you recover. And I've seen him up north a couple of times when we've got away from the cool weather here in Adelaide, and it would be in Victoria as well. But I think he was a player's player. That's probably the best way I can describe it. He wasn't known for being out, and maybe, I don't know, when those in that era, the premiership era, when he was probably footloose and fancy free. But when I met him, he was he's very supportive. He always take a phone call from you, which is great. We have extended conversations. I don't think I could keep up with him having a beer. He'd probably have me covered, I think. But at Melbourne it was infamous, and I know we can chat about a lot of things, but a fellow called Gary Sidebottom was playing for St Kilda at the time, and Trevor Barker, whom I knew quite well, and Barks came through, Pack and I sort of half grabbed him and had a bit of a laugh about it, and Sidebottom took offence and popped me on my backside pretty quickly, and I had one look at him and I wasn't going to get up very quickly because he was a bit bigger. Until a bloke called Dietrich came along and put him on his backside, and I got up and gave Sidebottom a fair bit of advice then, and a few physical prods. But he made people walk tall. There's no question of that. And I think maybe one of you people will maybe all across it giving you a due diligence, but I think was it Alan Jeans or somebody describing him as an athlete who taught himself to play football? because he could jump 6 foot at school, I think, and was he the Sunday morning training sessions we'd have at Moorabbin, it wouldn't matter what time he got home or what time he attended training, he would just pound lap after lap after lap out. And he might have inspired me a little bit too to make some compensation for some obvious deficiencies of, in my case, lack of pace, and just try and follow Dittrich doing 400s. I think everyone that you would speak to, and no doubt you've spoken to plenty, they would speak in glowing terms of him, and he's just a good fellow to catch up with.
Glenn, last one from me, but nearly 8 years ago, you were inducted into the St Kilda Football Club Hall of Fame. Now, not only were you inducted on the same night as Stuart Trott, who's also been on this show in the past,
yep,
but you were inducted on the same night that Tony Lockett elevated Rob Harvey to legend status and yep, gave his introduction. And it was also the 50th anniversary of the 66 Premiership. What did that night mean to you?
In footy terms, there's a lot of things you never forget, and I'll never forget the call from Ross Smith. He said, just called me out of the blue, actually, to say, would you be free on such and such a date? I've forgotten what it was. And I said, why, is there a club event on? He said, we'd probably like to award you enter you in the Hall of Fame or present you with your Hall of Fame presentation. Well, there was stone cold silence from my end of the phone until Smithy said, are you still there? And it was the biggest surprise I've had in terms of recognition. It was just so greatly appreciated, and to go back there and see all the various people that you played with and to be recognised by your peers, I think is just the most rewarding thing in sport. And the fact that they were so complimentary, and Cowboy actually interviewed me. Carl Dittrich was supposed to be interviewing me, but he arrived late. Or he had another function to get to, which I held him accountable for after it. But the Cowboy took plenty of liberties in the questions he asked as well. So it was, suffice to say, it became a bit robust, the conversation.
So what's your, supportership of the club these days? Do you still keep close tabs on the team? Do you still watch most games? Do you ever get to many games? And if you do, what do you see with the current group? Do you see any players that sort of stick out to you, or what do you think about Ross Lyon? And where's your sort of level that you're at these days?
Well, actually, I can add to your chat. You mentioned Ross Lyon. I was with Adelaide United. We were playing in Perth, and you might remember when Ross left St Kilda, or was left from St Kilda. And we were down at Fremantle having a coffee. We weren't due to play because the soccer was always played over night time, or football, sorry. When I was involved in soccer, I had to call it football. And we were having coffee, and Lois said, oh, that's Ross Lyons. And go and say g'day. And I said, Lois, Ross Lyons wouldn't know me from a bar of soap. But taking instructions from my wife, I went across myself, and I said, Ross, Glenn Elliott. And he said, yeah, no. He said, I know you're at the club. And I said, what are you doing over here? And he explained the unfortunate aspects of the financial problems that happened back then. And it was strange to see him. So I've always followed his coaching, which always seems to be honest, and it always seems to produce a competitive outcome, and it was just fantastic to see him back at St Kilda. And I think his competitive influence kicked in straight away last year, and hopefully the club can take a step forward this year, which would be great. But in terms of connections, I've tried, if I've been back to Melbourne a couple of times to pass player functions or events that are on, and picked up a mate of mine up at Alexandra who was a long-time supporter of the club with the social club side of it, and taken him down to a couple of shows, and we'll see them play over here and gather around. I called a couple of people in the sample today and said, you owe me a favour. Can you help me out with a couple of tickets? One wasn't too abiding, but the other one was. So that was so we'll get to see them. And, look, have any of you been to Gather Round?
No, not yet.
Last year we went to the last game. I've never heard of the Saints played St Kilda, played Collingwood, I think it was.
Yep.
And I've never heard 40,000 people at Adelaide Oval so quiet. It was nearly polite clapping when St Kilda or Collingwood took a mark because the stadium was full of people who were just there. They weren't necessarily Collingwood or St Kilda supporters. So it was like a practice match. So I hope that this year, I think we play, when I say we,
Richmond.
Richmond, yeah.
Yeah, play them at Norwood Oval. I think that both clubs will be putting some tape measures around their oval to shrink them a bit for training exercises because not much room to move on Norwood Oval. it's not a big oval and they'll probably get 10 or 12,000 people there, which will be probably like the old VFL days, actually.
As long as they get the result, that's the main thing. But Glenn, we appreciate you joining us. It's been great to reminisce and tell some stories. And, yeah, we wish you well with everything going forward, but thanks for jumping on this week.
Well, I hope I haven't crossed any lines. I've told most of the polite stories, not the mischievous ones.
We have had Russell Morris end. On, who's crossed that line well and truly. So.
Yeah. Done it before.
Thanks, mate.
Pleasure. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for the time, too.